If Jacksonville removes its Confederate monuments, what should be done with them? We'll take a closer look just ahead. Good Tuesday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9, and thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. We are always live at 9, also never miss a show. Download our app to listen anytime. Stream us live on Facebook, too. Just ahead, a forum's coming up this week to discuss what should be done with the city's Confederate monuments. We'll let you know what's going to be discussed, and you can discuss it right now with us at 549-2937. Then later, a conversation with world-famous artist John von Hammersveld, creator of the iconic Endless Summer poster, as he visits the beaches. All of that and more ahead this hour. There is so much news happening right now that we can barely get to it all this week. Of course, we're tracking Hurricane Irma, now a Category 5 storm, and it looks to be headed right for Florida. We'll be tracking that here in our 89.9 newsroom all this week. On Labor Day, President Trump announced he's going to phase out the DACA program, the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program for undocumented dreamers, as they're called. That affects thousands of Floridians. We'll be covering that this week. Lots to talk about when it comes to the news. But we're going to begin the hour right now with the latest on the ongoing debate over Jacksonville's Confederate monuments. There's been so much talk about whether the city's monuments and place names marking the Confederacy should be removed or renamed. You've heard a lot about this lately, but there's been relatively little discussion about what the logistics would look like. Where would these monuments go? How would they be contextualized? And what would replace them? Lots of questions. People have questions. They have points of view. And this discussion is one you can be part of later this week. It's at an upcoming forum Thursday night at the Hourglass Pub and Coffee House on Bay Street. Leading the talk will be Bill Delaney of Modern Cities. He's son of former Jacksonville Mayor John Delaney and local author Tim Gilmore. We welcome them now in studio with a preview. Bill Delaney, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
And Tim Gilmore will be along in a moment. And here's our question to callers. What are your logistical questions about this debate over Jacksonville's Confederate monuments? Give us a call, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online, send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. Or you can weigh in on our Facebook page. And so this Thursday night, you're welcoming the public out to a forum to really discuss all the issues around this. That's a smart idea because people do have a lot of questions. What are the most common questions you're hearing about this right now, Bill?
Well, we hear the two main points of view. There's those who just kind of want to remove the monuments, you know,
altogether.
Mm-hmm. You know, others think that they ought to stay for, there's various reasons there. You know, some, you know, really like what the monuments stand for. Others just don't want to see them destroyed or warehoused where nobody can see them.
And if they were to be removed, as City Council President Anna Brochet has called for, a lot of logistical questions are coming into play. Tim Gilmore, where would these monuments go? How would they be housed? How would they be displayed? How would they be contextualized? These are all issues you're going to get into in this forum Thursday night, because whether you're for or against this idea, this is something that is not going to be accomplished overnight. And this, particularly in the city's public places, like the Confederate soldier in Heming Park, that's a big logistical question.
That's true. I think that's one of the really good things that Bill brings to this discussion. Museums would be a wonderful place. People say that a lot. There has not been a whole lot of discussion, I don't think, you know, with museums about who would take them and how. I certainly do not support, you know, the destruction of them, especially, you know, the way we saw happen in North Carolina a couple of weeks ago.
People tore a monument down.
Right. And I have to say, it's really easy to get caught up in the shouting back and forth to the point where, you know, people don't really even necessarily know what they're saying. They're just fueled with emotion. And
you both hope to take that out of this discussion, it sounds like. Have a rational discussion?
Yeah, I think so. I think that, you know, asking these questions, you know, where do they go specifically? You know, what replaces them, you know, really opens up an opportunity for finding more common ground.
Where do you both lean on that? What would you like to see done with them?
Well, I think there are some that definitely need to be changed.
Which ones?
The school names.
The names of school, mostly on the west side, schools named for figures from the Confederacy.
Right. We have five schools that were named between 1959 and 1968 after Confederates. And the context of that time was, you know, Brown versus the Board of Education, where the Supreme Court.
A backlash to that Supreme Court decision.
Yeah, and it was very much a reaction to that. The city kept opening up whites-only schools in defiance of the Supreme Court and named them after Confederates.
Mm-hmm. So you would be in favor of changing those school names?
Yes.
And looking at what Jacksonville went through just to change the name of, it's now Westside High, the former Nathan Bedford Forrest High School, over just one high school name change. Imagine the fight over trying to change five.
Well, on the other hand, we now know the mechanism for doing it. It's been done once before.
Okay, so in addition to the school names, at this forum, you will discuss the markers to the Confederacy, Tim Gilmore, the statue in Heming Park. There's an actual Confederate park in Springfield, and a few other places, a few other notes, points of interest.
That's absolutely true. And of course, there's the monument to the women of the Confederacy in Confederate Park, which, you know, I think is... If you look at that monument, I think it's illustrative because it's very, you know, it's very sentimental. I mean, it's a woman, you know, it's a mother and her children are sitting on her lap and she's, you know, she's teaching them and nurturing them. And, you know, that's that particular image of the Confederacy. You know, there's nothing there about slavery. You know, there's nothing there about, you know, the fugitive slave law. There's it's a very sentimental representation. And I think that's illustrative of how the Confederacy has been memorialized in different times.
Which speaks to why there's opposition, pretty strong opposition in some quarters, to taking down monuments like that. People feel that erases history. Mm. Of course, opponents say, no, it puts it in its proper perspective. Bill Delaney, how are you guys going to navigate this discussion? And by the way, this is at a pub and coffee house. People will be having drinks and lots of discussion and libations flowing.
So. Yeah, I think that helps, actually.
But what about what Tim said, you know, this monument to the women of the Confederacy that doesn't explicitly talk about the reasons for the Civil War? It's implicit.
Yeah.
That's why it's so controversial.
Yeah, and in fact, it kind of you know, covers up the reasons. You know, it's the monument, if you read the inscription on that one, you know, it's about you know, the women who gave their all on country's altar back in the 60s. The monument was made in 1915.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so...
You know, I think that if people really, I think if people can be civil and truly look at you know, some the facts of the situation, you know, there are people who still deny that the Confederacy was about slavery. You know,
in fact, when you survey Americans, as many Americans believe the Civil War was about other things like states' rights, this nebulous concept of states' rights, for example, rather than the core issue of preserving chattel slavery. Half the country doesn't accept the reason the war happened in the first place.
And if you look at, you know, the different articles that states offered to secede, their reason, the ordinance of secession, as they're called, all of the Confederate states named slavery. you know, Florida's actually says that the person who the man who, you know, lets basically Lincoln doesn't say Lincoln, but it calls him something like, you know, an ignorant man who has just taken the presidency or something like that. Florida's says that the man who lets Lincoln come in and take our slaves is basically already a slave himself.
Speaking of
it's explicit.
Yeah, it's explicit. And speaking of Lincoln, what would you say to those, and this may come up at your talk in a few nights, and let's hope that the hurricane doesn't cancel your talk. What would you say to those who point out Abraham Lincoln was a racist and a bigot and was more concerned with preserving the Union than freeing the slaves? I've heard that argument in recent days. What's your response to that?
Well, I mean, it's more or less true. Except Lincoln's whole goal with preserving the Union was to end slavery. You know, he initially wanted to end it more long-term, that they would contain it to the South, and ultimately, as the country grew and new states were added, slavery would be eradicated that way, voted out.
I think, you know, it also comes down to the fact that the Confederate States of America was supposed to be a different nation. So, I mean... To support the Confederacy in a sense is you know, to support the South not being part of the United States. You could argue that and I don't want to. These are treacherous waters to get into. But you know, you could argue that it's an anti-American position, even.
Okay, and let's go to some calls. Thursday night, a forum on the city's Confederate monuments is set in downtown Jacksonville. What do you think? 549-2937. Frank is in Gainesville. Hi, Frank. Go ahead.
Good morning. How y'all doing? I think the statues should be moved to the Olustee Battlefield, our battlefield.
The Olustee Battlefield? Yeah, thanks for that suggestion. It's a little ways away, but what about that?
It is, and I mean, it's, you know, great historic site, and that's definitely something that would be worth looking into.
Rusty in Jacksonville Beach. Hi, Rusty. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Yeah, good morning.
Thank you. I think we miss an opportunity here if we're not careful. We have these statues, you know, just we all know why they were put there and what they represent. So here's a teaching opportunity. We put opposite these statues someone who was in the forefront of civil rights or who was, you know, people that have made a difference since then to the positive. And we tell the truth on the plaque about the Civil War person who's up there, whether they supported slavery, they were a villain, they were a war criminal, whatever the case may be. And then we have on the plaque across the aisle what good this other person did, what good things they accomplished. Because if we remove these statues and these so-called idols to the Confederacy, we do remove a part of our history that people tend to forget. Most kids in school now don't even know what World War II was. I'm of that generation born just after that. And so much history has already been lost through revisionist history, and we shouldn't perpetuate that by removing all of these statues. We should use them as an opportunity to teach a lesson.
All right, Rusty. Really, thank you for that. Bill Delaney.
Yeah, I think that's one of the suggestions that I'm going to make is for the Heming Monument and the middle of the city, you know, what if we leave that in place but then add a second column that honors the other side of the story, the African Americans, Unionists, federal troops, you know, the part of the story that's usually occluded, and then put up markers that say, in 1898, this monument was the way that the people in power at the time chose to remember the Civil War. You know, the new monument is, you know, kind of the modern take.
Tim Gilmore, do you agree with that approach?
I think it's something to discuss. You know, I think I haven't made up my mind entirely. I mean, when people say that, you know, we're taking down the monuments, we're erasing history. With that, if that's the whole argument, I totally disagree with that. you know, putting them in an educational institution and giving them historical context is not erasing history. A place in a park as a memorial is an honorific. But, you know, if someone, and, you know, Bill has some interesting ideas about this, wants to leave them in place, but bring in, more of, as the
more
caller
context.
Just said, a teaching possibility, then I think that's something we should definitely discuss.
Benny is in Orange Park. Lots of people waiting on hold. Hi, Benny. Go ahead, Benny.
It's Ben.
Ben.
Yes. Hey, I was just wanting to, you know, y'all have touched on it a little bit, and that is that we have all of these Confederate monuments that are, you know, honoring these people, and I'm just thinking as far as replacing the monuments, you know, to memorialize the slaves that were victims, you know, of those times. And I feel like there might be some opportunity for some healing in the community as a whole by doing so.
Yeah, thanks for that. And it's been pointed out in recent days there are precious few monuments to African American heroes that achieved global renown and came from Jacksonville, like James Weldon Johnson, for example. I know that there is a movement to build a monument to him in the La Villa area and so forth. But what about that comment?
Yeah, I think that's a wonderful idea. Yeah, we have not traditionally done a great job in this city of celebrating the contributions of African Americans.
Yeah, and you know, my goodness, African American history is Jacksonville history, and it's enormous. It's an enormous part of it, and you know. Mm-hmm. People have been talking about having a statue to James Weldon Johnson for as long as I can remember,
yeah.
And I certainly hope it happens. And the caller's idea, I think, is also a really interesting idea, to bring into some discourse.
There is a school named after him. We do have that. But let's go now to Hector in Bay Meadows. Hey, Hector, good morning. Happy Tuesday. Hope you had a good holiday. Go ahead. Yeah, go ahead, Hector.
Hello, yes. Yes. On the Confederate monuments, I would say that it is a evil thing against black people, and it shows the world that it's the same thing with Nazi Germany. They don't have any statues to Hitler, that they don't fly the swastika. But here in the South, it is prominent to display the Confederate flag to demean black people, to continue with this racist hatred against blacks. And that's what this whole thing is about. Some of these things were not built in the late 1890s and 1940s and 50s. And why should you consider the hate against your fellow man? That Germany does not allow this type of thing against the Jews. Black people, the slaughter, the Holocaust that was committed against these people is disgraceful. It's the world is looking at this whole thing. And you should be ashamed to even try to justify this type of racist traitors. These people are traitors against America. They wanted to form their own nation. You say that yourself. The whole world knows it. In England, no traitors are celebrated. No traitors. No traitors are celebrated in any country except this country. It's atrocious. You should be ashamed of yourselves for even trying to justify this type of atrocity that went on against your fellow man who was human beings.
Thanks, Hector. And someone who agrees with you just sent me the text of New Orleans Mayor Mitch Landrieu's recent speech about this matter in New Orleans, where they're taking down some of these monuments or moving them. I'm not sure of the exact specifics of what they're doing in New Orleans, but let me quote here quickly, guys. As Landrieu told his city, "The record is clear. The statues were not erected just to honor these men, but as part of the movement which became known as the Cult of the Lost Cause. It had one goal: to rewrite history, to hide the truth, which is that the Confederacy was on the wrong side of humanity. First erected over 166 years after the founding of our city and 19 years after the end of the Civil War. The monuments that we took down were meant to rebrand the history of our city and the ideals of a defeated Confederacy. These men did not fight for the United States. They fought against it.
Uh-huh.
These statues are not just stone and metal, not just innocent remembrances of a benign history. They purposefully celebrate a fictional and sanitized Confederacy, ignoring the death, the enslavement, and the terror that it actually stood for.
Yeah, wow, right. Obviously, it's absolutely true, and it makes me think of the memorial to the women of the Confederacy again, you know, sanitized. Absolutely.
Do you both agree with that? And even if we all acknowledge this, or most people do, then it becomes a question of, okay, what do we do now, which is what you guys are going to try to get at this talk.
Yeah, I mean, that's really my thing, is what do we do now? Mm. You know, we talk a lot about museums. As Tim mentioned earlier, we haven't really had talks with museums. You know, in my opinion, I doubt there's any museum in town that could take a 60-foot Confederate monument.
Yeah, we have a tweet about that from, actually, it's Hope McMath, the former head of the Cummer Museum, now has her own property called Yellow House. We shouldn't assume museums are the right places for Confederate monuments. Maybe some museums might not want them.
Well, that's absolutely true. They might not.
Here's another tweet. Okay. How about installing signage explaining when and why these monuments were erected? Here's a few emails. Don't forget Douglas Anderson High School was named for a black leader in Jacksonville.
Mm-hmm,
Ed tweets the show. What should we do about this? And the infamous Trail of Tears that caused the Cherokee tribe great damage. Of course, that's attributed to Andrew Jackson, after whom this city was named, even though he never even came here, and he was from Tennessee. But Ed writes, history is messy. Yes, it is, Ed. Stephanie in Riverside. Go ahead, Stephanie. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thank you. I was just calling. You were again talking about the statue to Southern womanhood in Confederate Park, and once again, somebody just referred to it as like sanitized or somewhat benign, but when the Sons of Confederate Veterans put that statue there, what Confederate womanhood meant was upholding white supremacy. We see her holding a book open and reading to a young boy and a young girl, and what she's doing, what her job is to maintain these quote unquote values. So I just wanted to say that there really isn't anything benign or sanitized about that particular statue. Implicit in its meaning is, again, upholding white supremacy and white women teaching white children their place. That's all I wanted to say.
Okay. Thanks, Stephanie. Your thoughts?
Well, when I said sanitized, to me, it's a very sentimental statue. It's a statue, you look at it and, you know, if as so many people have done, you ignore the purpose and the context and you just look at it, it looks like it is a memorial to, you know,
mothers
loving their children.
Yeah. Here's a few more tweets. A 2013 attempt to put a Union monument at Olustee was defeated by state inaction. I think I recall that. Link tweets the show, those who say removing the statues erases history will be pleased to hear about the existence of books. All right, let's go to Sieber. Sieber in Yulee. Sieber, is that your name? Good morning.
Hello, yes, that is my name.
Hey, go ahead.
I was born and raised in Jacksonville.
Okay.
Did you know that 75% of the residents of Jacksonville in a recent poll want to keep the monuments where they are?
That's not surprising at all. I bet you probably, that's probably about right.
It is right. We hired this company, did a nonpartisan poll with Save Southern Heritage Florida, and that's what the people of Jacksonville want. So I think what the residents should be allowed to vote on this.
Okay, thanks for that. Yeah, and I take your point. And in fact, when the city council president was on this program a week or two ago, Anna Broche, several callers asked her about that. Why could we not put this to a referendum? And she disagreed with that. She said she felt this was up to the elected leadership to decide. What do you both think?
I mean, I think, it's a very good point. You know, I definitely think that especially right now, if this were put to vote, you know, the monuments would be kept, hands down. But on the other hand, the people who are the most, affected by What the Monuments Come From by Jim Crow. You know, it's a minority population.
Yeah, her point was tyranny. Her, you know, the whole concept of tyranny of the majority, that the majority shouldn't decide by referendum something involving rights for a minority group, because more often than not, the minority group gets the shorter end of the stick in those situations. But Tim, what about his comment that the majority is not in favor of this?
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me either. I think this is why we need to have this discourse. I think I have taught in my classes at FSCJ, the text that I've used more than any other text in the years I've been teaching is the narrative of the life of Frederick Douglass. It's one of the most powerful things I've ever read. When I hear people saying that they are advocating Southern history and Southern heritage, I don't ever see the people who say that celebrating the blues, slave narratives, James Weldon Johnson, to bring him back up, Augustus Savage, the SCLC, the civil rights movement. What I hear them wanting to be celebrated is Confederate history and heritage, not Southern history and heritage. I'm not anti-Southern. I'm from here. I want a good South. I want to be in a place that I'm proud of. And so I want to have this discussion and this discourse. When my students read Frederick Douglass, a lot of them say things like, and this both shocks me and doesn't shock me, I didn't know slavery was that bad.
You've heard that in your classes?
I have heard that many times in my classes.
Let's go to James on the north side now. Hey, James, you've been holding a long time. Thanks for holding. You're on the air.
Yeah, thank you, Melissa. I have two things. The first one is that I don't know about this survey. I haven't seen this survey. About 75% of Jacksonville voted to keep these things. I mean, no minority I know of that has even heard of this survey. And two is that from what I understand, there's two different statues. I heard there was one that was put up in the Jim Crow era that, you know, put there to intimidate African Americans, and then you had some that was at the turn of history, just a reminder of the Confederate soldiers' history. My personal view is that the ones that was put up during the Jim Crow era, which was clearly put there to intimidate African Americans, should be taken down and destroyed. The other ones that were put up apparently at the turn of the century, I don't know how innocent it was, but they should put plaques at the bottom of them and tell them why or what they was there for, so when people say it, they can read the truth. That's all I got. Thank you.
Yeah, okay. Thank you, James. Let's go to Jacob in St. Augustine. Hello, Jacob. Thanks for holding. Good morning, sir.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having me on. I have a quick comment and then a suggestion for the conversation later this week. Regarding the caller that was just on about the 75% of Jacksonville supporting keeping the monuments, we've got to remember that when women were given the right to vote, when African Americans were given equal rights during the Civil Rights Movement, and very recently when gay marriage was made legal, those points in time, the majority of America was against those things. And so it is important that we remember that we cannot allow the majority to decide the rights of the minority in those circumstances. And regarding the conversation that will happen later this week, my hope is that we speak more in specifics rather than generalities, because when we speak in generalities, everyone gets upset because everyone's assuming the intention of the other person. They're all thinking of different things in their mind. So I know specifically we were talking about the high schools that were named during the civil rights era, specifically as a rebellion against the segregation of the schools. And I'm sure that there are some monuments, some markers in Jacksonville that have totally non-racist justifications for why they're there. And then there are others that were put up during the Jim Crow era. And we won't really be on the same page with those things unless we look at them specifically, unless we're talking about them one at a time, looking at the context for each and every one of them, because when we speak early about all of them,
all right,
everyone's going to be assuming something totally different. So that's my hope for the conversation later this week.
Yeah, thanks, Jacob. A few more calls. Let's get to them. Ira on the south side. Hello, Ira.
Thank you, Melissa, for taking my call. How do we expect a political solution on this in Jacksonville when the mayor is the champion of gerrymandering all the districts in Florida to ensure that the spirit of the South continues? Is there anybody that you think can lead the political idea of making Jacksonville a more open-minded and diverse decision on this whole issue? And how do you expect the mayor, who is responsible for the gerrymandering of these districts through Florida, to ensure that the white majority continues?
Are you talking about Mayor Curry's former role as head of the state Republican Party? Is that what you're getting at?
Exactly. He was responsible, and he perfected the gerrymandering process to ensure that districts remain mostly white. So how do you expect somebody with that Lee Atwater kind of attitude to help solve this issue with race equality and statue relocation, et cetera? Thank you.
All right. I don't know if it's quite accurate to place all of that on Lenny Curry. I mean, the gerrymandering is something that's been going on in the state for some time. But that said, the mayor has punted to the city council on this, by and large. The person out in front on this is Anna Brochet, the head of the city council. The mayor, as of right now, isn't taking a position. What do you both think about that?
Yeah, I think that ultimately the monuments are going to have to be a council issue.
Still, though, he has the bully pulpit of the mayor's office.
If he wanted to weigh in, I'm sure that he would.
He's chosen not to. Tim Gilmore?
You know, I guess he's playing safe. I commend the council president for her courage and her leadership.
Okay. Anyone interested in this, and judging by the calls, there are quite a few people who are, needs to come out Thursday night to the discussion. Bill and Tim are leading. It's a discussion over the city's Confederate monuments, a forum, 6:30 p.m. Thursday at the Hourglass Pub and Coffee House on Bay Street. Come on out. Hopefully the storm will not come anywhere near us, and you'll get a really good turnout and good weather for this. Gentlemen, thank you both so much for being with us and sharing your thoughts. We appreciate you being here.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Much more still ahead later. Artist John von Hammersveld, and also the Sing Out Loud Festival in St. Augustine, will take over the nation's oldest city for most of September. We'll tell you about it. That's in a moment.
Congress gets back in session with a lot to do. Time is running out to prevent a government shutdown and prevent the country from defaulting on its debts. And the president is keeping the pressure on.
Get this job done. And I don't want to be disappointed by Congress. Do you understand me?
How will Congress get its to-do list done? Next time on 1A. Weekdays at 10 after First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT. Your community. Your world.
Calling all educators. WJCT and Community First Credit Union are proud to present the 5th Annual Teach Conference, an event created by teachers to engage, empower, and inspire. Saturday, September 16th at the Hyatt Regency Hotel. Tickets are $30. Tickets purchased for the 2016 event will be honored. Share ideas with colleagues. Learn new ways to engage students and empower yourself to inspire others. Bring a friend and get your tickets now. WJCT.org/teach.
Join WJCT, the Florida Humanities Council, and Flagler College for the Vietnam War and the Many Meanings of Patriotism. This screening of the PBS documentary, The Vietnam War, and group discussion takes place on September 6th at 6 p.m. at the Flagler College Ringhaver Student Center inside the Virginia Room. For more information and to RSVP, visit wjct.org/storiesofservice.
If a hurricane threatens our state, Florida's public radio stations have joined forces to ensure you receive important storm information. No matter where you are, you can stay informed on the radio, online, on social media, and on the mobile app, Florida Storms. Timely weather information is always available from WJCT. The Florida Public Radio Emergency Network is supported by Citizens Property Insurance. Online at citizensfla.com.
First thing out loud is Bill.
Welcome back. Well, it's a celebration of music in St. Augustine. The Sing Out Loud Festival features hundreds of performers at venues across the nation's oldest city through most of September. Everyone from Steve Earle to Los Lobos, many other great bands and performers. Ryan Murphy is coordinating Sing Out Loud. He's also the director of the St. Augustine Amphitheater. WJCT is an official media partner this year, so lots of excitement there. Hey, Ryan, good morning.
Good morning. Glad to be here.
This is going on free concerts all month across St. Augustine. Pretty exciting.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. It's our second year doing this. Last year was our first, and it went really well. We had some weather issues, so we're ready for some weather issues this year. But regardless, it's free. It spans most of the month of September. It's the next three weekends in a row, Friday to Sunday. We take over a dozen venues. We have some really big shows at the amphitheater. It's a really cool event. It stretches pretty far and wide, so it makes me really happy.
This is something I would think that would have a ton of moving parts to put together. Mm-hmm. A pretty ambitious effort.
Yeah, I think once we opened that door, I think Sing Out Loud, in essence, was trying to capture what St. Augustine represents. And I think it's not just one genre, one scene. I think a lot of times people try to pigeonhole a city for a certain sound. And for me, I see so much locally, and I really wanted to put it all in one place. And that couldn't happen in one day, and it couldn't happen in one place. I mean, we're talking hundreds of artists. So, and more each year as people kind of move to the St. Augustine area and see it as a musical destination. And so I decided we'll just take over venues and we'll book literally everyone we can from St. Augustine. And we've included a bunch of, you know, Jacksonville artists and Gainesville and Tampa. And I think my goal eventually is going to be a kind of a Florida represented like festival.
Oh, very cool.
Mm-hmm.
And you've done so much to brand St. Augustine as a place for new music and cutting edge performances. That's something that you've been working on for a while. I think it's starting to pay off.
Yeah, they ran an article in the Record 2 days ago, and it just said the headline was "The Next Austin?" Which is funny because it's something I just say in passing. I don't think we don't have that much in common with Austin, Texas. But I think my whole thing with that is being a breeding ground for really good talent and artists. I mean, all the national acts that we have come through really love St. Augustine, and that's the bulk of what I do is at the amphitheater and the concert hall. And we get to show off the area, but also it breeds some really great music lovers and some great artists that really are affected by the... I mean, I never thought we'd be able to bring Paul Simon and Roger Daltrey and Robert Plant and Bob Dylan to St. Augustine. And that has a pretty big impact on the town itself and the musical fabric.
How were you able to do it?
I guess lots of money.
Anyone can be bought, even Bob Dylan, right?
Yeah, it wasn't that bad. I mean, we can only do so much with the seats we have. But yeah, I mean, the people love the place. People really love the vibe of the amphitheater. They love the city. So my job gets easier the more I push that.
You've gotten to see a lot of artists. Can you tell any tales out of school? What are some of your favorite stories from the green room or people that you've met, big names that have come through and performed?
I will say that a lot of times artists get really bad reps as being needy and just kind of, demanding. But for the most part, if you treat people like human beings, which is what they are, they respond well. I mean, they want the creature comforts. They have a weird life on the road. So if you treat them well, you know, with a cup of coffee and a nice breakfast and something, you know, you welcome them. And I think that's what we do best. They respond well. So for me, I think the only time I've ever gotten a little nervous was Steve Martin was doing his like bluegrass thing.
Oh yeah.
And he was walking down the hall and he said good morning to me. And I words couldn't come out of my mouth to
you
even
were
say
good
morning.
You were a little starstruck by him?
Yeah. He's just he's so ingrained in my childhood brain that
yeah.
He just jumped out of my childhood and was standing right there. So it was really cool.
Really world famous celebrities too, I found like they never look in person the way you think they're going
to look.
isn't it so weird? Like when you meet a really famous person and they just look a little smaller. than you think they're going to be. Well, like they, because they're normal human beings like you and me. Mm-hmm. You literally picture them as, I guess, taller and somehow like shinier than they really are.
Especially in the music world, in the rock world, I think there's so many tricks of the trade that to make people look larger than life. And I think that's what you're meant to see. I mean, but you have someone like Robert Plant. He was like, I'm almost 7 feet tall or whatever. He is a very large, larger than life human being. But again, they're all people, and it's just that's part of the job I love. I don't try to get too much in their business, but I do love learning a little bit about their lives and hoping that we make a good impact on them. And more the shows we have, the people love coming to us because of the way we treat them. That's huge.
And how is this helping tourism in St. Augustine, everything you're doing on this music front? And it's significant what you're doing.
I think there's the obvious thing that we put on large events. We put at least these large concerts 40, 50 times a year at the amphitheater. But I think outside of that, we're turning a lot of eyes and a lot of heads towards St. Augustine. It's that quality of life thing. A lot of people want to see what's going on. Why would all these artists be going to St. Augustine, this little corner of the world? Mm-hmm. And they see that we're on the world map when it comes to being a venue and in the industry. So right now, we're in there with Red Rocks and Wolf Trap and The Gorge and all these like iconic amphitheaters.
Right.
So when you're across the world and when you're an artist or you're in that world, you kind of see that we're just there. So if you haven't been there, you need to check it out. And more I travel places, the more people talk about, man, I can't go anywhere without hearing about St. Augustine. And in my world, that's huge. But I think people just, I mean, it makes, there's the history of St. Augustine, there's the beaches, there's the things that have always been going for St. Augustine, but I'm really trying to make it this place that it's alive. You know, it's not just about the history. It's alive with something more, with the future of music and representing what's happening now.
So what do people need to do then to make sure they get the most out of Sing Out Loud?
So Sing Out Loud, I think... So it's singoutloudfestival.com. If you go there, you see the lineup and the 200-something artists. What I've done is we put some big showcases together at the amphitheater. We put we have a really cool showcase next weekend. It's the 16th and so the 15th and 16th in Lincolnville. We built a stage, and that's going to be really cool. And proceeds are going to be going to the Lincolnville Museum. I'd like to see people come to that specifically because it's a very underserved part of St. Augustine history, mm-hmm. civil rights history, and the black history in Lincolnville is huge and very underserved. So it's nice to bring some attention to that. But I think looking at the schedule and finding some stuff you've never heard of and kind of challenging yourself, I mean, it's all free. Going to a venue you've never been to before, seeing some artists you've never seen before. I think it's fun to put some Jacksonville showcases together. I have some people in Jacksonville who put some cool like hip hop showcases together. Mm-hmm. And it's nice to pull from these different areas. And yeah, it's going to be really eclectic.
You can go to singoutloudfestival.com. The concerts kick off September 8th, and they run almost through the entire month of September, the 8th, 9th, and 10th, 15th, 16th, and 17th, 22nd, 23rd, and 24th. All concerts free and open to the public. Ryan Murphy, you're doing great work. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And speaking of free, really quickly, we have two pairs of tickets to give away, two sets of two, to the Jacksonville Armada game this Saturday night at 7 p.m. at UNF. This is courtesy of our sponsor, 927 Events. Two pairs of tickets. Email Paul at 927events.com if you'd like those tickets. And we'll be right back.
Few people have suffered online harassment like Zoe Quinn, a game developer who fell victim to a vindictive ex. The scandal, now known as Gamergate, exposed how bigots and bullies can destroy your privacy and your life. It also revealed what it takes to fight back. Zoe Quinn on her new book, Crash Override, next time on 1A. weekdays at 11 on 89.9 WJCT.
Now, I had a boyfriend. He was going for a Cat Stevens look, but it doesn't really work when you have a retainer. He also had a tendency to refer to me as m'lady.
Join us next time for more True Stories Told Live. This week, camp, cars, cockroaches, and the Kremlin on the Moth Radio Hour from PRX.
Saturdays at 3 on 89.9 WJCT.
Independent music transcends genre, form, and age. At Indie Endeavor, we endeavor to shine a light in the little explored dark corners of your musical imagination. Everything from new to old, foreign to domestic, electronic to acoustic, we play it all. Indie Endeavor, Tuesdays at 11 p.m. on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, finally this hour, it's Live with WJCT this Thursday night on WJCT television. If you're curious about our programming, our local and national shows, and you'd like to take a behind-the-scenes look at everything we do here, you need to tune in Thursday night, 8 p.m., as Karen Fagans and myself and a few other guests take you inside WJCT. This is going to be an old-fashioned live television broadcast. How about that?
Really excited about it. We're going to have a live phone bank so that anyone can call in with questions about our programming or about how things work here at WJCT and really get the inside scoop.
Yeah. And so this is cool because people ask us all the time, people that maybe have never been to this building. There's a lot of activity here all of the time, both on the radio and television side. And there are other things happening here quite frequently, other groups coming in to do events. It's a hub of a lot of activity. And so I think for public media fans, this will be a lot of fun to sort of peek behind our curtain.
Yes, and it is produced by Rich Connor, who does amazing work, and he has sat down with a lot of the people who work here at WJCT and done really compelling interviews about why they got into this line of work and what they love about our programming. And so I've seen part of the first hour of it. It's really, really well done. And it's so interesting to kind of hear those behind-the-scenes stories from people who work here.
Yeah, and, you know, there are people that we've worked with here for a long time that even you and I don't necessarily know everything that they're doing or what stories they have to tell. So I'm kind of curious to watch some of this, too, mm-hmm. honestly. And but this is also a way for people to connect with us. They'll be able to call in, support the station, and sort of interact with us, too.
Right. And we've split it up into sections. So we're talking about all of the different ways that WJCT serves our community. So we'll be talking about some of the national content that you see on TV, including the Vietnam series that's coming up. We'll talk a little bit about radio, of course, and the news programming and all of the severe weather coverage that we have, which is going to be so important in the upcoming week. Some of the outreach that we do in our community, the programs and events that happen here in our studio. So really just a look across the board at all of the different ways that WJCT is involved in our community.
Yeah, and people might not realize that we're part of the Florida Public Radio Emergency Network here at 89.9. And with Hurricane Irma bearing down on Florida, serving as this community's emergency operations station is really something we take quite seriously. And let's all hope that the storm goes out to sea or into the Gulf of Mexico. I think we're all hoping for that. And weather permitting, we'll just continue our normal operations through this week and into next week. But if severe weather strikes, you do need to always know that 89.9 is your state-designated emergency operations station. That is one small part of everything we'll be talking about on this special Thursday night. And just tune in Thursday night at 8 o'clock to WJCT television and watch. It's going to be a live two-hour show. I think we're going to all need some coffee to get ready for this. Some of us, they get up really early anyway, but it'll be the excitement of a live broadcast too.
I'm looking forward to it. And the people who remember WJCT's auctions many years ago, just the excitement of those live programs and having people on the air live and the phones ringing, it will be that type of environment that people remember from so many years ago. And We're really excited to produce a show like that again.
Yeah. So 8 o'clock Thursday night, catch us on WJCT television. It's live at WJCT. We'll see you then. And that's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Mershart. Michelle Corum runs the board. The show theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chevchuk. And never miss a show. Download the WJCT app, listen to us there anytime or on iTunes. Next on 1A, recess is over, Congress is back in session. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.